Welcome to Coaching DNA Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wyckoff. My guests on this podcast are coaches, athletic directors, sports psychologists, and really anyone else that can add value to leaders. In each episode, we spend time exploring leadership, culture, development, personal growth, and much, much more. The guests are different in many ways, but share profound similarities. They are hungry to get better, they are guided by purpose, and they are driven to develop the people around them. Each episode allows us to dive into what skills, attributes, and giftings make up great leaders. When I'm not doing this podcast, I run Kingdom Coaching. It is my consulting business where I coach coaches. I work with coaches one-on-one, I work with coaching staffs, as well as run online cohorts. Additionally, I write a weekly email newsletter to resource coaches with tools and strategies to be better leaders and coaches. To find out more, visit my website at kingdomcoachingtw.com. And please check me out on Twitter at kingdomcoachtw or at coaching_DNA and give me a follow. I hope you enjoy the show. Our guest this week is Sean Johnson. He is the scouting director for the Minnesota Twins. Sean and I played together at Wichita State in 1996, so we go way back. During this conversation, we talked about leading a scouting staff of 27 people and how he navigates that. We talk about and really break down Twins GM Thad Levine and President Derek Falvey, just kind of how they lead, kind of gives us a behind-the-scenes picture of what their leadership looks like, which was really, really interesting and also really encouraging. And we get into the interplay between the analytics and the human element when it comes to scouting. This was a really, really fun conversation for me because I'm a huge fan of Sean. He's a big-time leader. He's an awesome guy. I think you're going to really enjoy this. So without further ado, my conversation with Sean Johnson. Sean, thanks so much for joining us. Let's hop right in. Why don't you walk us through your journey from high school to present day?
Yeah, so I grew up in Wichita, Kansas, went to Wichita South High School. Played baseball there, played basketball growing up. I think my last year I was dominant in baseball was probably 12 or 13. And I started working downhill, but managed to end up playing in college. A dream come true to end up at Wichita State to play for Gene Stephenson and Brent Chemnitz. Being a hometown kid was a dream come true. So I think that experience there really springboarded my career. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't be in this position I am today without that experience and the things I saw, and the things I learned from being around that program. So played there, was a student assistant coach for a year in 1999. My last year playing was 98, was on the 96 World Series team with you, which was incredible. 2000, 2001, I was the director of operations for the program, which was, you know, I think I was making less than $27,000. And I never took a day off. I loved the job. It was one of the best jobs I ever had. Really showed me the value of, you know, trying to do something that you love to do and it'll never feel like work. So since I've been in scouting, I'll talk about that quickly. David Chad, Wichita native, who's assistant GM of the Detroit Tigers now, was at the time the scouting director for the Florida Marlins. He offered me a job to scout in the Midwest. That was in the fall of 2001. I got in right before the ownership change had happened. John Henry, who owned the Marlins, sold the team and bought the Red Sox. So the Marlins had new ownership and they brought all their people in from the Montreal Expos at the time. So I was 4 months into the job and I was basically let go. I remember being on a phone call with Al Avila, who's now the GM of the Tigers, and he told me I was free to pursue other opportunities. So I didn't know what other opportunities were out there. I thought I was going to be a Marlin for a long time. It didn't work out that way. Luckily, I knew a scout named Greg Miller, who was a coach at Wichita State back in the day, and he worked for the Twins in the Midwest, and the Twins had an opening, luckily, out in the Four Corners region. They lost a scout in the middle of the spring, which is a tough time to hire. I ended up interviewing, getting connected with the Twins group, flew out to Oakland to interview with Darren Johnson, who was the regional, he was a West Coast regional supervisor at the time. He offered me the job that day. I flew home, packed my stuff from Kansas, which I thought I'd never leave. And I was off to Phoenix, and where I worked as an area scout in the Four Corners for 5 years. Was lucky enough when Darren Johnson became the scouting director, I became the West Coast cross checker, and I did that for 10 years. And then in the fall of 2016, I became the scouting director when Darren was promoted, and Derek Falvey and Thad Levine had just come in from Cleveland in Texas. And surviving a regime change is hard, but I've managed to do it. And it's been another great ride. So I'm in my 19th year with the Twins, and very fortunate to be able to say that.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks for walking us through that. So I want to dive into a couple people that you mentioned. Gene Stevenson, Wichita State. Talk about him. What'd you take from him? What stuck out to you? What made him so successful?
Well, when I think about Gene, I think about competitiveness, the will to compete and to beat people, beat them soundly. I mean, that was what he lived for, was to be competitive. And to do that, you had to be prepared. You had to outwork other people. You had to put the time in. You can't just show up in that many World Series in a row and for that long, to be the winningest coach in two decades straight. Think about it. Probably won't be done again, So to do that, you have to have an elite level of competitiveness, confidence, and just attention to detail. If a drill was supposed to go from 12 o'clock to 12:07 and it was still going at 12:09, he would lose it. He wanted things done the right way. He gave you expectations. He set them from day one, which is something I try to do with my staff to this day that I've stolen from him. But attention to detail, accountability, raising people up, making them feel like they could be better than they actually could. I think you've probably felt that way as a player. I certainly did too. I think everyone felt that. So that push on you to be better than you thought you could be, he brought that out in everybody.
So let me ask you this. This is obviously since you and I played for him, and at the same time, one of the things that I remember him talking a lot about was attention to detail, and those details are hugely important. And then when you would go watch us, I've had multiple people tell me stories about walking into X Stadium to play against us, and they look out on the field and there's pitchers in flip-flops and no shirt out in the outfield shagging home runs. There's position players with cups and jock straps on the outside of their shorts. And so it feels very almost bipolar, attention to detail, and yet we at times look like a ragtag crew. Talk about that. I'm curious your thoughts when you think of combining and talking about those two types of things. Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it's a great point. I still remember being at the College World Series at Rosenblatt. We're waiting to go on to practice. Yeah. And Clemson walks in front of us, and they look like a military detail, right? They look like they're there just for straight business. And we got guys, like you said, none of us look the same. There's really no rules. I think Gene probably was ahead of his time a little bit there, where it was, players today want to be themselves. We hear that a lot in coaching and recruiting, right? They want to be able to fit in wherever they go. So, Gene let guys be themselves. He didn't have his only rule was show up when the bell rings, let's get it on. So he kept it pretty simple. Obviously, I think he'd probably do it different now, as far as organization and wearing the same uniforms and all that. But I think he was really instrumental there and just getting the best out of people. Hey, do what you got to do. But when the first pitch is thrown, let's do this.
Yeah, no doubt. That's good. And then pitching coach Brent Chemnitz, talk a little bit about him.
I mean, Coach Chemnitz, really, I know he's a dear friend to you and certainly to me and to a lot of players that played there. I think he was he was always another guy who could make you feel better about yourself and raise you to another level that you never thought you could go to. So I was fortunate being a catcher. I could go sit in on Brent's meetings and Gene's meetings. So I got a good dose of both. And I still remember those meetings to this day, just the intensity of them and the focus and the detail. So another incredible coach in a totally different way. He got people to believe in themselves. I think part of being a coach or a leader of a department is you need people to feel secure, confident from day one and know that you belong. Because a lot of people come into these situations and they don't feel like they belong. But he had a great way of making you feel like, look, this is where you're at. You could go here if you want to. Now it's up to you, but I'll show you the roadmap to get you there. And I'm going to keep it simple at the same time. It's nothing that's too complex, and he's all about keeping things simple. And he just had a great way of making you feel like you could really up your game farther than you ever thought you could. And an intense competitor too. You know, Gene and Brent, you know, there's a reason why they didn't stand next to each other in the dugout, because they just both would boil over. Yeah. Even, you know, Jim Thomas, our hitting coach, those guys were just ultimate competitors and they needed some space, and sometimes it would bubble over. But Gene always knew that had to happen to create that environment where, look, we're here to win.
So you mentioned this with both Gene and Brent about their ability to just kind of make you feel bigger and better than probably what you were. I've shared on this podcast, I was visiting with a guy by the name of John Mayer, who's the beach volleyball coach at Loyola Marymount. He played for a guy out at Pepperdine that he said the same thing. He just made me feel 10 feet tall and bulletproof. And so we had the conversation about what is it? Like, what specifically, if you had to flesh that out and put language to it, what did they do? So I'll ask you the question. When you think of that general idea of they just made me feel 10 feet tall and bulletproof, what did they do? What did that practically look like?
I think they were always good enough to watch, let you do your thing. And then once you failed, or they saw you failing, you know, Brent was going to tell you the first day, like, here's your new changeup grip.
Yeah.
Why don't you work out of the stretch only? Think about getting your knee a little higher in your delivery. He would let you go do your thing. And once you had probably less success than you thought you might, he was there to pick you back up. And he knew the right. And I think timing is key here, right? It's not right after you're done, because no one's down on yourself more than you after you're done competing and you failed. He'd give you time to get over it. And then he always knew the right time to bring you back and lift you up. So I think timing's everything there. Obviously saying the right things, but he had a really magical way of doing that. And Gene's different, right? He's going to remind you right away when you failed, right? Yeah. And some people couldn't handle that. And some people really needed that. So I think the key there, generally speaking, is you've got to know when to deliver that message. Is it right away? Is it 2 days later? Is it the next morning in a text? We didn't have text messages back then, but I'm sure Brent would have crushed that, you know, with the timing, because he would just know when to send it and make you feel better and bring you back to life.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought, because I mean, a lot of my listeners are coaches, and is there, you know, there's not a better quality as a coach or leader that gets your people to raise their performance, you know? And so it's just been an interesting thought of me working with coaches, how do you articulate how to do that? How do you help somebody get a feel for how to do that? I think you bring up a really good point on specifically Brent, on just how he would not change you immediately, but once it, like at the moment, right before you got into the pit of despair, you're not there yet, but you're heading like, dang, I don't know if this is working. And you're all ears, your mind's completely open to any, you know, advice and counsel. And he would come in at that moment and then cast vision for you. Like, he would paint a picture of, like, here's who you could be. And it helps that it's like Greg Brummett, Tyler Green, Darren Dreyfuss, Jamie Bluma, Braden Looper. You know, it helps. Brian Elkers, all those guys. I'm sure it helps to have track record. But yeah, anyways, Talk about David Shad. He obviously gave you your start in scouting. And for me, he gave me, you know, he drafted me. So I'm a huge David Shad fan. Talk about him. What'd you learn from David Shad?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've learned more over the years because I just got to work with him for 4 or 5 months. And then we were all in different organizations after that. So I do know David, you know, he, much like, you know, Brent, maybe to include him in that group, is keeping things simple, what you see, trust your eyes in scouting, be able to recall things. You got to be able to remember the players you've seen. You've got to build that Rolodex of players, I like to call it. If you just go to games and just keep scouting and putting grades down in the boxes and putting reports in, and then never turn back and look at what you put in and how you got there, you're never going to get any better. So, you know, David knows what he knows what he knows. He believes in it. You know, I haven't been able to work with him, you know, since 2001. So, you know, I'm not sure how he's evolved and changed, but he's a simple guy. He's a great human. People love working for him, and love being around him. He's a great storyteller. Just one of the funniest, best guys you'll ever meet.
Yeah, agreed. So you get your start with the Marlins, sort of, and then, you know, basically you spent your whole career with the Twins. I'd love to hear you kind of look back at the last 17, 18 years, and what are some key areas that you have grown in? Like, what are some areas that you're like, man, you know, we talked off air about, you know, our 40s being really pivotal moments of development and growth, and we feel like we're hitting our stride in some areas. As you look back, what are some key things that you've learned that you've developed and grown in?
That's a great question. You know, being a twin has been pretty steady. I go back to the very beginning working for Terry Ryan, who's just one of the best baseball men of all time, no question. Mike Radcliffe, both those guys are in several scouting Hall of Fames, baseball Hall of Fames. Terry was executive of the year. Learning from them that you have to give people respect and show them that you're willing to respect them before they'll respect you. I think that's huge. But also accountability. Again, circling back to that, you've got to be able to tell people what you expect out of them to get them to go there. Otherwise, you're just constantly facing disappointment. I don't know why this guy won't do this. I wish this guy would do better. Well, if you never tell a person what they should be doing, whether it's a job or as a role on a team, you're never going to get there, and you're the one that's going to be constantly disappointed. So giving people expectations from the outset, I think I've learned that right away, because it just makes your life a lot easier, and you're making that you're challenging that person to be something and be something great, not just an average person. We talk about, you know, despising mediocrity, like, and back circling back to Gene, right? It would be, you know, he'd always say, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. He was right, right? Mm-hmm. You've got to be going in one direction or the other. So we talk about constant improvement all the time, every day. It's got to be on your mind. So that's something that certainly hopefully permeates through our culture today and over the last few years, and certainly a goal of mine.
How have you got better, Sean, with just people, developing people? Because obviously when you start, you know, you're quote unquote at the bottom of the food chain. Now you're the developer. You're the, you know, that's your role. Yeah. How have you improved, and what some key areas in that?
Yeah, it's probably outside of the draft and picking players and seeing our group get the players we wanted on draft day, developing our guys is my favorite part of the job. We've got guys on our staff that are in their mid-20s. We've got guys in their upper 60s on our staff. They're all at different timelines and different parts of their career. We've got probably 10 guys out of 27 people that are within, you know, 5 years or less in the job, and some have moved to different positions. So to be able to pour into those guys is really, really fun. I think it really fits my strengths as I feel like I'm a servant leadership type of person, where I just like to pour into people. I want to see them get better. The way I approach it now, and I think I have since day one of being the director, is if I can get 27 people to be the best they can and do the best job they can and want to be here and make this more of a, than just a job, it's a family, it's a team, it's the place they never want to leave, then we'll have good drafts. If we have good people and good processes and good systems, and we've got everyone pulling on the same end of the rope, we will have great drafts. That's simply how I look at it. Because, I mean, look at what we do. We're predicting behavior and performance of 18-year-old people. You know, you can reflect being back at 18. It's like, I don't know what I was going to be or how I was going to look or if I was going to be a good hitter or a strike thrower. But it's difficult. So the drafts will be good. We'll have some bad ones too. But for me, it's about bringing everyone on our staff to the highest level they can be, to growing them, investing in them. And I think that really, back to your question, you've got to pour into people before they'll give you back what you want. They have to know that you care about them, care about their family, their kids, not just, okay, here's the times we're meeting, here's the time we're going to be at the ballpark, and that's all we're going to do. I want to know about their families. I want to know where they came from. I want to know what they want to do with, I want, what's your career span going to be? Where do you want to go? How do I help get you there? So I think my guys know that I'm going to partner with them to get them where they want to go, to get the buy-in, to get them to do the things we ask them to do. And the other golden rule is never ask somebody to do something that you're not willing to do yourself. I think that's huge. I think that shows some feel and instinct. And I don't want our guys to ever go, wow, I can't believe you asked me to do that, because Sean would never do that himself. So I kind of stick by that. I'm sure I screw that up every now and then, but that's my attitude towards leading people in a department.
What does that look like? So I love if I'm listening to podcasts, it's like, I love that. I want to care for my people. I want to pour into them. What does that practically look like as a scouting supervisor to pour into 27 people? Give me some day-to-day rhythms that you do to make sure that happens.
Yeah. So I think I start with the group that's closest to me, that I talk to the most, our assistant scouting director, Tim O'Neill, Billy Corrigan, our national supervisor. We have 4 regional guys that cover the country. Then we have 18 area scouts. So I really love keeping it as flat as I can. I don't want there to be a hierarchy or a sense that I'm not reachable. I'll call all our area scouts all the time and just chat with them, see how life's going. I don't need to know where they're going or where they're at. They know that they've got full rein to go do what they need to do. Just make sure the job gets done and don't embarrass the club. That's pretty much the only rule. So, I make sure that messaging gets carried out. But I'm trying to connect with, it's hard to make contact with 27 people on a regular basis. But whether it's through emails or conversations, and I get to see some of the scouts more than others, depending on where they're at in the country. So I always look forward to, if I'm going to California, we've got 3 scouts in California. I'm going to try to see them. I want them to go to the game with me. I want to hang out with them and get lunch or dinner and just see how they're doing. And you know, I can share my life as well, and we can kind of pour into each other. So I think there's some departments where that doesn't always happen. I can't tell you which ones they are, but they're, I hear stories all the time. I haven't talked to my scouting director all year. And it's like, we talked 3 times this week. Like, I don't get that. So I think you have to make the time. It's got to be on your, when you wake up in the morning, you've got to think about, who do I need to connect with? Who needs my attention? Okay, I need to put this fire out. Because there's rarely been a week that goes by in the last, 4 years for me, where there's just nothing going on. And there's like no issues and no one's got a problem and no one has any needs to take care of. So there's always something going on. Much like being a head coach or an assistant coach, you're always dealing with something. So you've got to wake up with that, I think, in the very front of your mind. Like, what do I need to do today? Who do I need to address? Who do I need to pump up? Who do I need to congratulate? Who do I need to say, hey, you can do better at this? So being critical, giving feedback both ways. And I guess that's one other thing I could jump into is, as a scout, when I started, you get a contract like a player for less money, obviously, but you get the annual contract that just mailed to you, and you'd mail it back to the stadium and you got your extra year. You got a call that said, hey, you're doing fine. Hope to have you back. So for me, I was starving for more feedback. Mm. I'm like, how do we move our people forward if we don't have a chance to, we don't tell them how to get there or why they need to get there. So we have way more things in place now where we're constantly talking about getting better, whether it's individually or as a group. We have end of year meetings where, you know, we're giving some 360 feedback. And the beautiful thing about, you know, feedback is when you hear that word, what's the first thing you think of? It's negativity, right? Mm. I've seen those conversations turn from the first year, I was scared to death how it was going to go. I think our staff was scared to death how it was going to go. And it turned into probably 80, 90% positive.
Yeah.
It was a good chance to shower people with things to make them feel good about, hey, I'm noticing you do this. This is fantastic. And then, you know, we ended up, we'll talk about the things where they might have graded out a little lower than maybe they thought or where they were at. But the 360 approach really gave us a good foundation to say, this is where you're at and this is where people think you're at. Now, when they don't align, let's talk about how to get you there. And I'm going to partner with you. We're going to put other people in your path to align with you, empower you, and get you to where you need to be because you can get there. So if you never bring those things up, time just goes on and on and on, and then you're back to that disappointment train. You're just riding that every day. You're let down by people. So again, going back to accountability and setting expectations at the jump is paramount.
So you mentioned, it sounds like there's an organic feedback loop that happens as you're having lunch. And it sounds like there's organic feedback happening. And then you mentioned kind of the end of the year 360. Are there any other proactive, like this, we do this consistently moments of feedback?
I really think it's just individual with our staff. And part of that's the issues with being remote. Like it's different if you have a clubhouse of 30 players and you see them every day and you can kind of love on them and push them and prod on them on a daily basis. I see some of our scouts 7 days a year in person. So, you know, we've really connected differently this spring on Zoom under the circumstances. And that's really shown us, hey, we can see each other's faces and talk about stuff and let's do this more. Let's do this in the winter when things are slower, let's stay together. So constantly keeping that level of team and making sure people feel that way about who we are as a group and we're staying connected and informed. I think, you know, that's really the biggest thing for us. I think in any job you have in life, you want to feel like your work matters and you want to feel like your input helped move the needle in the decision-making process. And so I think that's one of my things when I wake up in the morning is, does everyone feel connected? Who might feel shut out? Who do I need to talk to and make sure they know that they're appreciated? That's the things I think about pretty much every day throughout the year.
That's good. So I want to play off of that, what you mentioned. And I don't know, you know, what organizations, I just know there can be this thought nowadays of, front office does not care about the scouts anymore because it's all analytics. Mm-hmm. So how do you use analytics and at the same time use, you know, take input from the scouts and know that, you know, make sure they know that they're valuable, but yet we have this analytic piece now that can give us some pretty darn good information too. How do you do that?
I'll go back to 2017. My first draft as a scouting director, we picked first in the draft, which equals no pressure always. And then we're also bringing in analytics more into our process. So we had so many things in the air and it's been a growing process since 2017. And I think we're finding our stride and these things take time, but the biggest challenge I think is for our scouts is, and we just tell them, look, go out and evaluate players like you know how to do it. Don't worry about, obviously, you know, you've always been paying attention to analytics to some degree. We've always looked at stats and batting average and on base. And now you just have way more things to look at. There's way more tools, TrackMan, Rapsodo, all these things can measure the things that we couldn't always see before, which is why there's less presence of scouts in major league ballparks and AAA, they can measure how fast the guy's running. They can measure every pitch the guy throws. So it's definitely in the amateur space, there's way more gaps to fill in with the, with what the numbers are telling us. So I think you've seen the shift from old school scouting. Guy shows up in a big car with overalls and a tweed coat, and he just gets out and signs this player, and it's, you know, Mickey Mantle or something. So now you've gone to the heavy analytics. Let's just let the numbers drive the decisions. Let's just take guys with good stats. Let's not take high school players because they're no good, which isn't true. So I think people are finding that the sweet spot is bringing that marriage of scouting and analytics together. And that's certainly, you know, when we get in the draft room, we're trying to take players that our scouts love, and the analytics support that decision to love the player. That's just right where we live on every pick. So our scouts basically will go out and, you know, write a report, tell us what you see. The biggest thing for me, as an area scout, you've got to know the players. You've got to know how they're wired. You've got to know what their background is, why they play the game, what's their drive, what's their passion, what's their why to play the game is huge. And do they compete? The numbers can't tell you that all the time. It's an indicator, right, of performance. But if you don't get a guy that's wired the right way for your organization to get through the minor leagues, there's so many people involved from the scouting side to player development. There's a lot of people that touch that player before he gets to the, to, you know, your TV in the big league. So all that being factored in, the analytics we layer on at the very last second. That's how we want our scouts to see that, to feel that. We want to know your opinion, and then let's take this information that can support or at least give us a reason to pause in our decision making. Why this doesn't match up. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the data and what that means. And does it support your opinion or does it not? And let's try to make the best decisions we can using both parts.
That's good. And so let's say a scout loves player A, and you get down towards the end, but player A's analytics, let's say they're a pitcher and just have some concern. There's some like legit concern. Yeah. Is that just conversation with scout and let's work through this? Yeah. How does that kind of play out?
Yeah. So it depends on the pair of players you're picking from. Let's say they're both pitchers. We're going to use, if the scouts have them in the same round or same part of the draft, what we'll do now, if it's a college pitcher, we can really dig deep into the pitch mix and what that looks like on a movement plot. And see, well, how do we make this, can we make this pitcher any better? Is he already optimized? What are the chances we can make this guy and take him to another level where he's better than the other player? So usually there's some movement there to make one guy A and one guy B, but not always. So whatever conversations we need to have to decide between those two guys to put them in the right order, we'll have them. But we just have way more tools now to use than we did. It used to just be, well, I thought his fastball had carry. Well, you can't prove it all the time. You might have been really good the day you were there.
Right.
And now we can look at a guy's entire spring season in the SEC and go, yeah, this guy does have fastball carry. And yeah, his breaking ball is real. So we just have way more checkpoints to use to come up with our – to get to – when you're going from A to B on a decision, we got way more stops along the way, as long as you utilize them and try to utilize them in the right way.
That's good. So as you've just kind of been sharing for most of the recording so far, Sean, two things that I keep coming across as I'm working with coaches, and I don't know if I haven't been around a coach or leader who has had really good success, who you would just put in the category like that's a high achiever, that doesn't have great clarity and doesn't have build great trust. And you mentioned like right at the outset, making sure people know the expectations and here's what we want. And here's what our, you know, what we're asking of you. Get basically clarity, just painting a very clear picture, and then trust as you build trust, as you go have dinner, as you connect with these guys and as you have hard conversations. So it sounds like clarity and trust are, again, by the way, this is probably a self-fulfilling prophecy because, but as I'm hearing you and I'm thinking, It's like, dang, Sean Johnson has to create great clarity in his organization with his guys, and he's just got to build great trust. And those are two components. I don't care if you're in the business sector, if you're a tech startup, or if you're a scouting director or a coach of a local junior college, clarity and trust.
Yeah, I don't think you don't get trust if there's no buy-in. You've got to have people believe in what we're doing and where we're headed and why we want to go there. So obviously, being a playoff team on a consistent basis, winning a World Series one day, those are things we think about. But to me, it's back to the people. We want people to feel like you're part of something big. Yeah. Your opinion really matters. We're better with you on this staff. You should feel like it's a really special place to work. And when you hear people, you know, we bring people on, that they'll tell us that I've heard so many good things about this organization, the people within it. I'm really happy to be here. So for me, it's keeping that momentum of, yes, you're right. This is a special place. I want to make sure this is the best place you ever work. And I want to make it super hard for you to leave. At the same time, I want to see you grow. I want to see you go wherever you need to, but I want to make it really, really hard for you to not want to be here. That's my goal. That's my mindset. And it takes a lot of energy, right? Like you said, teams that have that clarity and that buy-in and that trust, it takes a lot of energy. So you've got to really manage yourself and make sure that you're balancing yourself and your own growth with, you know, trying to grow other people. So I think that's huge.
How do you do that? You're in charge of 27 people. Who pours into you? What's the sharpening that you get? And I'm sure your scouts and your cross checkers, probably to a certain extent, but at the end of the day, that's not their job. That is your job to pour into them. How then do you get poured into? Who sharpens you?
Yeah, I'm lucky to work with, you know, Thad Levine, Derek Falvey, guys like that who have come in the last few years, excuse me, and really shown us a different mindset, different way to look at things, a different way to grow. I think we've had a strong connection of team here always, but changing the attitude and the way you go about your business, caring about each other, making sure there's no silos, there's, you know, everyone's in the same group here, and let's make decisions together. There's really that feeling of team and network. And so I just try to carry that out. I think for whatever reason, by nature, I've always felt like I need to keep moving and keep improving and never being satisfied with where I'm at as it pertains to being a leader or a coworker or a teammate. I've always tried to pay attention to along the way over the years. Like, there's always been things that I've seen where I'm like, I really like the way that person did that. I love that. I'm going to use that. And then I'll see the opposite of, I can't believe that person treated that person that way. I would never do that. And I promise myself I won't do that. So I think I've learned the good and the bad. I've tried to pay attention to that and be aware of how I'm doing, how I'm treating other people. I've always been really mindful of that. And I hope that shines through with how people think of me. But I really just have had a strong desire always to improve. I don't know where that came from. I just think going back to maybe college or even some coaches in my little league life is like, you can be better and you have to be determined to do there and you have to work really hard. Give my dad a lot of that credit. Hardest working guy I've ever known and ever will know. And so the value of hard work, doing what you're saying you're going to do, and make sure you're accountable. All those things I learned from my father too. So I got off to a good start. And I think for whatever reason, I've just always been passionate about improvement.
Yeah. It's got to help when you're in an organization that's really, really healthy.
Yeah. I that's a great point, because if you could be as motivated as anybody on earth to want to be better and to improve yourself and others around you, if you don't have the right leadership, it's not going to happen. It can't get there. You can have all these ideas bubble up in your head, and if you can't really execute them and follow through, it's just a dream, you know, at that point. So I'm thankful I've been in the right spot, the right organization to let me thrive and grow and feel empowered. And so I just try to pass that on, that feeling down to all of our scouting department.
So pull back the curtains a little bit in your organization. And you mentioned Derek Falvey and Thad Levine. and what it looks like in our conversations over the last year or so, just talking about the desire and the passion to learn and to challenge assumptions and all of those things. Pull back the curtain a little bit. I'd love to just maybe get a picture of what it's like to be a twin, because it's forward thinking, it's progressive, it's always challenging, it's let's get better. And I think the really great organizations have that mindset. Yeah, pull back the curtain. Tell us a little bit about how that you put it this way, a different way to grow. Talk about that.
Yeah. So we do have a scouting code of conduct that we kind of use, just guidelines how to be a part of this team. And our motto really is, what can we do today to get better? So I think challenging status quo is huge, especially coming from the Twins organization did a lot of the same things the same way for a long time, and it worked. And then it felt like we became dinosaurs within a couple years.
Yeah.
So we're back up to speed. We feel like we're in the top third, at least, if not more, from an analytical perspective, and bringing in we brought in people from different leagues and different organizations, different backgrounds. So we're creating a more diverse culture on a lot of different levels. We're encouraging people to fail and to grow and to say, I know we've been doing it this way for 25 years. Why should we keep doing it that way? Couldn't we do it this way and it'd be a little more fruitful? Okay, maybe it is. And then maybe it's like, no, we should keep doing things the same way. So I think challenging the way we've done things, and it's really hard to break that change when it's been the way you've done it forever, right? You hear that line all the time. People don't love it at first. So that's been another real challenging piece for me, is getting people to change the way we think about players, the way we evaluate them. We've changed our grading scale. And it's something the Twins have done since probably the 70s, right? So it's really hard, but as long as you have a why behind it that makes sense, that people can buy into and go, all right, I can get on board with that. I never thought of that, but I'm in. To get to that point is not that easy or not that simple, but we challenge all the things we've done in the past to get kind of out of the bad ruts that we were in. We were in a lot of good ruts too. We've had a lot of great drafts, but we're trying to get more consistent every year and make sure every decision we make, every pick we make, makes a lot of sense. So we have a lot of things in place now that kind of keep us between the lines and keep us from getting in, getting out of bounds on some guys. Where, you know, we talk about bias a lot and how that's huge in scouting. If you think about it, it can really wreck a draft or really get you sideways in your process quickly. So we're very aware of it. And we try to make sure that we're conscious of it throughout our process. And I think it's really helped.
Yeah. I love that. By the way, I listened to the book Decision, the book that you shared with me. I think it was two brothers, the Heath brothers, maybe. Anyways, I listened to that 2 weeks ago. Really good. Really good stuff. Talk a little bit about Derek Falvey and Thad Levine. You mentioned them obviously several times. They've created an organization that's really healthy and really progressive and forward thinking and successful. What is it about them? What is their skill set? What do they have that allows them to lead? And what has it allowed them to lead the Twins to such a healthy, successful spot?
Yeah, I think they're both different people. They have different backgrounds. They have different ways to look at how to approach the game. Dad coming from Texas, they did it differently than what Derek did in Cleveland. So they've been able to really, it's a really cool thing to watch, because both of those guys could run any team in the league on their own. But they found a way to take things that they're good at and find their strengths that fit their skill sets. Derek is an amazing, he's got that 30,000 foot view, and it's really good. And it's really like a step ahead of people all the time, it feels like. So he's constantly thinking about big picture. How do we get there next? He's constantly trying to think about how to move forward and make things better. And he's great. He's a great people person, and he's very empowering. I think they're both very empowering people. They let people do their jobs. They try to stay out of the way. They give you some guidelines and give you some expectations of the job, then they get out of the way. That is incredibly good with people. He makes people feel welcomed. Makes them feel warm, feel good about themselves from day one. You know, he's an amazing wordsmith. His language and vocabulary and the way he can talk to people is just elite. It's really incredible to watch him. And he's extremely funny at the same time. He can really slip in a joke in the middle of a really serious conversation. I've never seen anybody do it as good as him. So it's really impressive. But I think going back to both those guys, they really let people be who they want to be. They ask them to not do too much. They want them to be efficient. They want people to have a good work-life balance and not make baseball the most important thing in their life. Obviously, we should try to be good, but we don't have to kill ourselves trying to do it. It should be about our family and the team and the people. And so that's really been a shift. I think I really dedicated my 20s and 30s to, like, I'm going to be the greatest scout of all time, and I'm going to make the Twins a champion. And I'll get a ring. It's like, I don't care about the rings anymore, if I get one or I don't. I want the relationships. I want that feeling of family and team. And I think that's way more important at the end of the day. And that's really what counts.
Dude, you just explained like some studs. I mean, both of them sound like they get it on multiple levels. Yeah. So you just gave us a picture of some of their skills, their attributes. What are some of their habits? Like, you talked about Derek Falvey, about being at 30,000 foot, just really seeing things and anticipating things. What is it? What have you seen from them on their habits? Are they readers? Are they question? Like, yeah, I'd be curious on how that plays out and how they got, obviously some of it's wiring, but what do they do? What have you seen them do that allows them to just be great at those areas?
Yeah, they're both extremely well-read. I think we've created that culture of reading and how do I, what are ways I can improve? What are things I can do to think differently about things? And a lot of that easily, right, is books. Now podcasts have become a great place to do that for people. But those guys are both well-read. When I see them in the office, we're usually talking about, if we're not talking about baseball, we're talking about books and ideas and, hey, I saw this article in the New York Times, or they're constantly absorbing information and then really thinking about how it pertains to what they're doing and how it pertains to the Twins. Can it make us better? Should we try this? So this is super inquisitive and curious. They both have that in spades. They're just all about getting better and at the same time investing in people to get us there and make sure that it's, we all feel like we're getting this through the finish line. So that they both do a great job of that.
I love that. Okay, let's talk about, pulled back the curtain on your 360 report. What have people said about you that has been the strengths? What are the strengths of Sean Johnson?
I think the main thing to me is people know that I care about them. They know that I'm on their side. I'm not the, you know, obviously I'm the director. I'm going to make some decisions at the end on a few days in the draft. I'm going to have to pull the trigger on some things and make a final call for the group. But outside of that, I just want to be part of this team. They know that I'm invested in them, believe in them, and I'm accessible to when they have needs. They just pick up the phone and call me. So I think that's a big one. what else? Yeah, I hope they would say I'm a good teammate. I think they know that I respect them, and I think a lot of the guys respect me and would do about anything for me if I asked them to do it. Only in turn because they know I'd do it for them. So I that's a few things that come to mind.
Yeah. What about,
I don't want to be known as the best scout, or I don't care about any of that stuff.
Yeah. Seems like you're a really good communicator. For me, just on a social friendship level, but I'm guessing it transfers into work, that you just do a good job of communicating. I don't know. I'm just thinking, yeah, how I know you. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you've got to be able to communicate on a timely basis, especially when your team is remote and spans the entire country. They just want to be informed. I was like, well, I'm going to send this email out. I don't know if they need to know it or not, but then I'll get a response. Hey, I really appreciate the info. thanks for keeping me looped in. When you're by yourself as a scout, it can be a pretty lonely job. Totally. You know, a lot of, you're by yourself a lot. So to feel that connection, feel like someone's took the time to inform you and say, you're part of the team and you need to know this. It may not be huge information, but I feel connected. So, and again, I love that, creating that experience of, we got a bunch of people on the same bus going the same direction and they feel a part of it. They feel like what they're doing matters. That's the number one thing to me. And I try to be a great communicator and I try to lead by example, because we need all of our scouts and people involved with our process to communicate on a quick, fast, efficient, productive level. It just has to happen. We talk all the time about players, about process, about what we're doing, where we're traveling. So you need people to communicate at a really high level. And if I don't do that, I don't match that, it's not good enough.
Yeah. Okay. Continuing to pull back the curtain on the 360, what are your constraints? What are those areas that you feel like you've gotten feedback where you need to grow in?
I think we talk about things being a positive and a negative. You could be a real strength, right? But also take you down a bad road. I think I've gotten better at, not as a servant leader, you want to make sure everyone feels good all the time, right? And when that doesn't happen, that really bugs you. It really rubs you the wrong way.
Yeah.
So I had a hard time dealing with that. Like, I got to get this one. Okay. One person's upset. 26 people are in a good spot. All I can think about is the one person who's bitter. Right. Yeah. So I want to clean that up. I want to take care of that. And now I think as I've grown into the position, I don't sweat that as much. I don't let one or two people, if they're in an unhappy spot, ruin my day, because I've got to be strong for the other group that's feeling good. Now I'm going to address it, but I'll do it in time. And I'm not going to let that situation bog me down mentally, because if you do, you just have bad day after bad day. I don't do that as much.
Yeah.
I've learned, as a people pleaser by nature, I can really get sideways if a couple people are unhappy or bummed out about what they're doing. So I try not to get too far in the deep end on those anymore.
Yeah. A guy that I worked for used the term gold and shadows. We have gold, and when that gets overplayed, that becomes our shadow. That becomes our dark side.
That's for sure mine.
Give us a picture of your growth process. Do you read daily? Are you a podcast guy? Are you like, I just need to reflect and have silence? What does it look like for you on your daily rhythms to stay sharp, to stay fresh, to stay ahead of the curve, to continue to grow and develop?
Yeah, well, I usually have the only problem with reading for me is I'm a tremendously slow reader. I hate it. And sometimes it makes me sleepy. So I don't read. I usually try to read late at night but I've usually got two or three books going, and I'm kind of bouncing in between them, just trying to take bits and pieces from it.
Yeah.
I have a couple different podcasts I like to go to, just to kind of stimulate me. If I'm on a long drive, going to see a player, and you know, cruising through the backwoods of some state, I'll crush some podcasts. And I try to watch or listen to things that are not all about getting better, but I rarely do that. I rarely just have like a John Grisham book audio tape going. It's usually something about leadership or culture. I don't know. It's probably not healthy, but that's just where I'm at.
I end with three questions. The first is, what are you currently reading or listening to that's helping you grow?
So outside of Decisive, which we talked about, I love that book. Talking about overconfidence and narrow framing and all those things, I think is huge. Wisdom of the Crowd is another one I just finished this spring, but really fantastic, talking about, it really speaks in the scouting world and getting a lot of different opinions, how 10 or 12 opinions about a player is probably more accurate than one or two.
Yeah.
Just because if you buy into, it's kind of the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire game show, when you could poll the audience. The audience was 90% right in the history of that show. It just a lot of people might be able to pull the answer out versus one or two. Yep. So a fascinating read.
Yeah, James, the I just looked it up. I'll link it to the show notes, but it's The Wisdom of Crowds, James Sir. I'm not even
going to mess with his tough last name.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
I'll link it.
Read Range this year. Loved that. Found that fascinating. And then I got Obstacle Is the Way is the next one I'm going to dig into.
Yeah, love it.
And that was
love
recommended by a lot of people I work with. So
totally. Podcast, what are your go-to podcast?
Coaching for Leaders, Dave Stachowiak. I've been on that one forever.
Love it.
It's got a ton of different things you can dig into, topics. You could just go through and scroll and find something you like that piques your interest, and it'll be good. Really solid. Craig Rochelle, Leadership Podcast, really good. Love it on a lot of different fronts, from a spiritual front to just great, simple truths that he speaks. I love him. So those are my main go-to ones besides yours.
Okay, I'm going to throw one out to you, Sean. One of my new go-tos is, and I feel like these guys, if they make any money off their podcast, they should give me a cut because I've been hyping this one up. It's called The Learner Lab.
Okay, I'm on it.
Second piece of advice, what would you give a young person just get in the profession of professional baseball scouting?
There's a lot of different avenues to take now, a lot of different departments that people want to get into. So from a scouting perspective, you know, don't just crank an email out to all 30 scouting directors saying you'd love to have an opportunity. You got to go to the ballpark. The scouts are at all the parks. Just know where they're at. Befriend one, get to know them. Ask them about the job to make sure you actually want to do it. It's a lot tougher than it looks. It's a lot of time on the road. It's a lot of time at the ballpark. There's some long days involved, but I think getting to know other scouts in the game that can lead you in the right direction, that can get you out and give you a stopwatch and show you how it works and how to know the scale and all those things that go into it. But that, for me, that's way better than sending an email out and hoping you hear back. You need to go meet somebody, because a lot of times these jobs are, when we have an opening, it's, hey, do you have any people that might be a good candidate?
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, I met this kid at a game, or I met this girl at a game, and they seem to have a real sincere passion for the job. And I think they've got some feel, and I would definitely interview them. And that's where we go. It's not like, let me scroll my emails that I've received, because I have a ton of them. And it's just really hard to pick out of that group. So knowing someone that's a real person, a real scout, I think that's a good start. Player development, coaching. I mean, we got people from all kinds of different backgrounds, but you have to get connected in that world. So getting out there, letting people know who you are is huge. I just really promote that versus sending the email out to the club. It's just the better way to go.
Love that. And then the last question, I end with this. Who would you like to hear? Being an avid Coaching DNA listener that I know you are, who would you like to hear on this podcast? Give me some names.
All right, I got a few. I got Mike Radcliffe, who is our VP of Player Personnel. He was a scouting director for 13 years for the Twins, been with the Twins over 30 years. Tremendous leader, tremendous scout, just an incredible guy. He's in, I think, 5 or 6 scouting Hall of Fames. He should be in all of them. He's just the best, and one of my mentors for sure. And then I'll go a few coaches, and none of these are new names, but I think these guys are on a different planet from a preparation. Just amazing, amazing coaches in different ways. They're all different people, but John Savage, Tim Corbin, Kevin O'Sullivan, I think those guys are on a different planet for sure. You already did Monty Lee, who I think is going to join them. I love that guy.
Yeah.
I think he's incredible. If you could go play for somebody, I don't know how you wouldn't want to go play for Monty Lee.
Seriously.
You know, those are the ones that come to mind. And then my other sleeper is Courtney Thompson, who I think somebody else mentioned. 2-time Olympian volleyball player, one of the greatest setters of all time. The only reason why I have any connection and to promote her is she dated one of our scouts for a bit, and he was showing me these YouTubes of her talking about her experience in the Olympics. And I'm like, who is this person? This is on another level. So if you want to interview one of the greatest makeup players of all time in any sport, I'm saying Courtney Thompson probably fit in that bill. And I think she's super into high performance mindsets and all these things. So perfect candidate. Please get her on.
I think it was John Mayer, the volleyball coach.
I think John Mayer.
It was John Mayer. And I think she works with Michael Gervais, who has a podcast and works with the Seahawks, or not Seahawks. Pete Carroll works with him, some, you know, performance type training.
If you don't take my word or John Mayer's word for it, just pull up Courtney Thompson YouTube, like Olympics or whatever, and her interviews, you're like, this girl is different.
That's cool. Well, Sean, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. And just to encourage you, as I've known you for the last, gosh, it's been a long time now. 24 years. Just, I was thinking of some adjectives and some ways to describe when I ask you your strengths and what the feedback was. I'll give you my quick feedback on Sean Johnson. I always sum up Sean Johnson by, he just gets it. He gets people, he can navigate conversation, he has a feel. And then just hearing you talk today, just, you know, kind of reiterate your ability to lead, to win influence, to build trust, to have clarity. So I don't know what your goals are, and we won't even get into all that, but I would, it would not surprise me if in, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years, at some point, you're named a GM, because I think you're that good. So I'm super fired up to have you on this podcast. Thanks for taking time, and it was good catching up with you.
Real pleasure, Travis. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm assuming if you made it this far that you enjoyed the conversation. Would you please leave a review and pass this podcast along to anyone else that you think might enjoy it? If you have any suggestions for the show, I'm always looking to grow and to improve the show, email me at travis@kingdomcoachingtw.com. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, have a good one.